to her people. Good morning. It's time for our prelude to start, and Rich Norris will play for us.
Good morning. Hi, I'm Patricia Compton. I'm a member of this congregation, and I serve on its board of trustees. And I welcome you all this morning to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Northern Westchester. Unitarian Universalism and this fellowship is a denomination that welcomes all, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, which are factors that can separate us in our larger world. If you are visiting us this morning, a special welcome to you. We invite you to join us for coffee hour after the service and talk with anyone here if you have any questions or just to get to know some people. And if you are returning people, I encourage you to seek out newcomers and welcome them and get to know them a little bit. There are brochures for visitors out by the door, and please sign our guest book. We are, for the next few months, going to be having a combination of lay-led services and services presented by guest ministers. So again, if you are visiting, please come back several times as our services can be different from week to week. There will be a children's program today, and we ask that if any children do remain in the worship service, that if you do have some trouble with children being quiet or comfortable, that there is babysitting and there is the children's program, so please take advantage of those. Now that we are well into the 21st century, we would now like to ask everyone to remember to turn off their cell phone so that is not too distracting. Again, welcome and enjoy the service.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Catherine Ward. I'm not a visiting minister. I'm a member of the congregation. Our opening words are written by Annie Dillard. We are here to abet creation and to witness to it, to notice each other's beautiful face and complex nature, so that creation need not play to an empty house. We need to have our chalice lit. Amanda and Anne, if you will, please.
May the light of this flame illuminate our lives and strivings of the Spirit. May it heal misunderstandings and strengthen love.
Please join now in the saying of the unison affirmation. Love is the doctrine of this fellowship. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony. Thus do we covenant with one another. Now is the time that we engage in fellowship greeting with one another. So in the spirit of this being basketball season, please keep your pivot foot planted and greet the people that are in your immediate vicinity and save the longer conversations for the coffee hour after the service. First hymn is hymn number 38 in your hymnal.
Grace for the morning.
As a slight correction to the order of service today, right now we will take the time to sing the children out and then do the candles of joys and sorrows. Now is a time when we engage in one of the most integral parts of being a true fellowship, and that is the sharing of our joys, sorrows, and concerns with one another. So if you have a joy, a sorrow, a concern, or just an announcement of something important in your life, please come up and light a candle from the chalice and share it with the congregation.
Hi, my name is Dan Simmons, and on the 27th of this month, I'll be going into Lake Moriah up in Dutchess County to raise money for the Special Olympics. It's a polar bear plunge, if anybody be interested in sponsoring me.
Good morning again. If anybody has a pet, a companion, a friend, you know how much they can mean to you. And I have a 13-year-old cat who has been with me through thick and thin and ups and downs, and she went missing on Monday. And I had gotten to the place of letting go and being grateful for the years I had with her and hoping that she was in a better place somehow. And she arrived last night. She's been hiding under my house. Not hiding. She's been stuck, I think, under the house. But I light this candle for the joy of her being okay. But I light it for all the pets and friends and companions that wind up lost, and the owners who, the friends, I hate calling us owners, the friends who worry about them and miss them. And I was really praying that some angel would surround her and keep her safe, and so I'm just thinking of all those animals that need that.
Hi, I'm Susan Singer, and I'm lighting a candle. I think it's a tribute to this faith. My younger daughter, who's 30, had a chance to spend a month in India at an ashram. And we got glowing emails, and she came back through New York and told us about all the spiritual experiences she'd had. And she was going on and on about all the wonderful teachers that she'd encountered. And then she summed it up, and she said, you know, it's just like Unitarianism. And I just thought that's such a wonderful tribute to what we teach.
Let's go be here, Stephanie. Wait. I'm lighting a candle for my mother. She's 87, and she's the oldest, was the oldest of five in her family. And her younger brother has just gone into the hospital. And his days are numbered. I think he's better today than he was yesterday. And I'm sorry for Uncle Arthur, and I'm sorry for Mother. I think it's very hard to be the survivor.
Good morning, I'm Stephanie Brandenburg. I light two candles. One is a candle of gratitude for so many blessings I have in my life, people and friends and healthy family. And this is a candle of prayer for my brother. He's challenged, and he's really struggling at this point in time. So I hope you can keep him in your prayers. His name is Howard.
Hi, my name is Paul Dong. This candle is thankfulness for a couple different things. One, sometime back, I mentioned that my mother had been diagnosed with a recurrence of uterine cancer, and she's in her third round of chemo right now, but she's doing pretty well. But what I'm really thankful for is that spiritually and emotionally, she's really dealing with it well, and she's kind of thankful that we're all with her on it, and that she's got, you know, friends around her and everything. So that's really comforting. Now, the other thing I'm thankful for is that I'm in a small group in the fellowship. It's the men's group, and they've really been a source of support for me, because I was recently laid off from my job, and it's a difficult time trying to figure out where I'm going to be going next. And it's just nice to have people around that are great listeners. So, thanks.
Hi, I'm Linda McNeil, and Nan DeLand just left to take care of the children, so I'm going to light a candle. Her dog, Bia, died, and her dog, Bia, was 21, and she just took care of Bia as long as she possibly could, and she had to put her down yesterday.
I'll first light a candle on a bit of a personal note. As I'm sure many of you know, I had my sort of, I guess, trials and tribulations with regard to my former military service over the last several years. And as a result of that, I had been trying for some time to get in touch with other people who had gone through much route that I had as far as claiming conscientious objection and expressing their opposition to a lot of the things that were going on, and it was pretty unsuccessful for quite some time, but over the past several months, I actually managed to make contact with several others that had received discharges under the same auspices from the military, and as a result, we were able to form a group to provide support and counsel to people that were seeking ways out of the military, to the point that we even have a website that's up now, www.peace-out.com. And we've received overtures of support from one congressional office, Representative Ron Paul, who's a Republican opposed to the campaign in Iraq from Texas, several media contacts, and it looks like what I had initially envisioned as kind of being a regional thing is picking up a lot faster than I had ever anticipated. And I'm just grateful for the wonderful people that I've gotten to know through this, and finding that, you know, I'm not necessarily the only one with an experience in the military who came to a lot of these same conclusions. And on, I guess, another note, I'd like to light a candle for all the unspoken joys and concerns and sorrows that are out there within our fellowship.
Our first reading this morning is by Walt Whitman. It's the last section of his poem, Song for the Open Road. Allons, the road is before us. It is safe. I have tried it. My own feet have tried it well. Be not detained. Let the paper remain on the desk unwritten, and the book on the shelf unopened. Let the tools remain in the workshop. Let the money remain unearned. Let the school stand, mind not the cry of the teacher. Let the preacher preach in his pulpit. Let the lawyer plead in court, and the judge expound the law. Camarado, I give you my hand. I give you my love, more precious than money. I give you myself before preaching or law. Will you give me yourself? Will you come travel with me? Shall we stick by each other as long as we live? The choir has a piece to sing for you now, and the text is by Emerson.
Now is the time when we give to the fellowship, and we'll now have our offering.
I'm so grateful for the music this morning. What a gift to us. Thank you. Our second reading is again by Annie Dillard, from her memoir of Growing Up. What a marvel it was that the day so often introduced itself with a firm footfall nearby. What a marvel it was that so many times a day the world, like a church bell, reminded me to recall and contemplate the durable fact that I was here and had awakened once more to find myself set down in a going world. In the living room, the mail slot clicked open and envelopes clattered down. In the back room where our maid, Margaret Butler, was ironing, the steam iron thumped the muffled ironing board and hissed. The walls squeaked, the pipes knocked, the screen door trembled, the furnace banged, and the radiators clanged. This was the fall the loud trucks went by. I sat mindless and eternal on the kitchen floor, stony of head and solemn, playing with my fingers. Time streamed in full flood beside me on the kitchen floor. Time roared, raging beside me down its swollen banks. And when I woke, I was so startled, I fell in. Who could ever tire of this heart-stopping transition, of this breakthrough shift between seeing and knowing you see, between being and knowing you be? It drives you to a life of concentration. It does. A life in which effort draws you down so very deep that when you surface, you twist up, exhilarated, with a yelp and a gasp. Who could ever tire of this radiant transition, this surfacing to awareness and this deliberate plunging to oblivion, the theater curtain rising and falling? Who could tire of it when the sum of those moments at the edge, the conscious life we so dread losing, is all we have, the gift at the moment of opening it? The choir's next piece is using a text by Wendell Berry, lives in the mountains of West Virginia, is an environmentalist of the First Order and a poet of the First Order and perhaps a crank of the First Order also. The text for your future reference, although I suggest you just listen to begin with, is in the back of our hymnal at 483. Thank you. Thank you. For 2 years, during all four seasons of 1846 and 1847, all eight seasons, Henry David Thoreau roosted in the woods of Massachusetts on the shores of Walden Pond, seeking some knowledge about himself and about life. He borrowed the land, he borrowed the building materials, he borrowed the tools, and he ate many meals at friends' houses, and then proclaimed it was possible to live without spending much money. He was 30 at the time, already a little bit cranky himself. For all of this, however, some of his discoveries and his insights, which he recorded in his journals, inspire me. He has blazed a path which I find helpful to find my way through the woods of daily life. One of these discoveries is that heaven is under our feet as well as over our heads. Let me tell you the context in which he said this. The first winter that he was there, he spent his time drilling the ice to discover the depths of Walden Pond and what its contours were. As he had said, it's remarkable how long men will believe in the bottomlessness of a pond without taking the trouble to sound it. So he drilled and he cut holes and he actually made quite a fine cross-sectional map so you can see where it is deep and where it is not deep, what the slope is, where there's a little sandbar across the arm of an inlet. And one of the holes that he had dug, he looked down into it and saw in that sort of dimmy gloom of light that comes through ice the fish that were underneath. And it is at that he commented, heaven is under our feet. He also compared this whole process of sounding the pond to getting to know people. As we know people, we mostly all we can see are the shores, like we see the shores of the pond. We can tell their depths by the color of their water, by the ruffles on top, by the shape of the edges or the slope. And it's all inference. That's about all we can know. We miss the undulations, the secret sandbars, the hidden inlets and outlets of their lives. Probing these depths is a little harder than drilling a hole in the ice in the winter and dropping a plumb line. We can't wait for winter. So how do we get to know each other? Well, we have our experiences with each other. What we do is observe. We watch. We see what people do. That speaks a lot for what they feel and what they are. We listen to what they say. Perhaps that speaks less for who they are. But we watch where they smile and where they tear up a bit. All of these is like sonar. It's not an actual experience of what's there, but we can get a shadow and a picture and an understanding. It's living life together is what it is. It's taking the time and listening and taking care. One of the gifts of this fellowship has been the small group ministry. There are two groups that meet, and I'm a member of one that meets once a month. And what the group gives us is that time, that space to listen, to care, to hear the shadows of the depths below, and to learn who we are, who each other is. Both Thoreau and his 20th century partner in thought, Annie Dillard, counsel us to awaken to what is around us and what is within us. Frankly, what do they mean by being awake? Aren't we awake now? I've had my coffee, been up. I'm no longer lying in bed with my eyes closed. But indeed, what do they mean by awake? If you listen to the words of Emerson's poem, The Rhodora, which has now been sung for you, you will realize that this poem is about being alert to beauty, just the beauty that is around us, even when it is something small and something that's so easily overlooked. He has written the poem about a tiny flower, which is a woodland plant. It is not normally a cultivated plant. The flowers appear before the foliage does, and the flowers are a brilliant pinkish purple. So imagine those in the gloom of the woods before there's much green. To come upon it is a surprise. You can't plan this type of thing. To notice it and enjoy it is a blessing. But even if no one notices it, its beauty is not wasted. To say that it would be wasted simply because one of us didn't see it is arrogant. Just because a human doesn't stop to indulge in it is like to say that therefore this beauty is wasted on the desert air is like saying its whole purpose was to please humans. It's not. What would have been wasted is the opportunity that is afforded to us by this little plant lurking in the damp. Reconsider the words. In May, when sea winds pierced our solitudes, I found the fresh rhodora in the woods, spreading its leafless blooms in a damp nook to please the desert and the sluggish brook. There's no human in there. The purple petals fallen in the pool make the black water with their beauty gay. Here might the red bird come, his plumes to cool, and court the flower that cheapens his array. There's a switch here. The speaker of the poem has been addressing the reader. Now the speaker will address the flower itself. Rhodora. If the sages ask thee why this charm is wasted on the earth and sky, tell them, dear, that if eyes were made for seeing, then beauty is its own excuse for being. It wraps up, the poem wraps up, with what is essentially a romantic notion, and is one perhaps you will recognize, that all things are interconnected, that their existence is tied together. Why thou wert here, O rival of the rose, I never thought to ask, I never knew, but in my simple ignorance supposed the selfsame power that brought me here brought you. This is the moment of awakeness. We exist. Annie Dillard addressed the same issue in her book, Pilgrim of Tinker Creek. She tells of coming around the corner of a building, a city building. It was four stories high. Just at the moment that a mockingbird stepped off the edge of the roof. You've seen birds fly. This mockingbird stepped off the edge of the roof and plummeted almost the entire four stories. It was a sure disaster until moments before she expected him to crash into the sidewalk. He flared his wings and flew. There was a purpose in this. There was a reason for this. The mockingbird stepped, fell, flared, and flew. It was a moment of beauty. It doesn't matter whether anybody was there to see it or not. It wasn't a planned performance. But what matters is that she did see it and that she was there for it, that she recognized it, that she took it in. This is what she calls on us to do, is to be present for the performance. The performance will be there. Our job is to be there for the performance and to be awake to it, to attend the show. It's what this whole performance of the mockingbird is what she calls an extravagant gesture on the part of nature. So to stop, to focus, to see. One of the jobs that I give my writing students, one writing assignment that they have in class, it's a small group, usually no more than seven, and in a circle, plunk down on the middle desk a conch, or conch, if you prefer the alternate pronunciation. You know those shells. This is a great, beautiful one from some tropical water. It is a slick, blushing pink on the inside. The outside is golden and rough. It's huge, and it's got all these spikes around it and a crown on top. My assignment to my students is to spend the next 10 minutes writing about what this shell means. Oh, they are most annoyed. What do you mean what it means? It doesn't mean anything. It is a shell. Okay, start from there. And they usually do by the end of the time when then they have to read what they've written. They usually have come up with a number of things. It is a house. It is a home. It is a reflection of what is out in the ocean where we cannot see. It is a leftover. It is empty. All of these things they come up with. What does this shell mean? One of the things that means to me is that it is silly, actually. What is the purpose of this thing? The whole purpose is to provide a home, to provide shelter. It does that for this amorphous. And it is so beautiful. Look at the colors. Look at the shape. Who needs this? Why does it deck itself out with these spikes in this crown? Is that for survival? I doubt it. The clam doesn't do it. It is just merely an extravagant gesture on the part of nature. Walking in the Adirondacks, I often find these moments of the extravagant gesture. On one path that we were on, and this only happened once. I assume it happens lots during the early summer, but this one time to us, we're walking along, and all of a sudden there was a stretch. It must have been of 10 or 15 feet of the path. It was covered with hopping frogs about the size of my thumbnail. They were crossing. You know, why does the frog cross the path? They were crossing from one side to the other. We couldn't walk without risking a frog's life or 20 frogs' lives or more. We had to sweep the path as we went to get them out of the way so that we could be on our way to go from point A to point B, which is a human's way of taking a walk. An extravagant gesture on the part of nature. One thing that we do often see on the paths, and it's usually on one of those mulchy, soft and damp parts of the path. I think damp is necessary, but we see the occasional or the often red eft, which is a baby salamander. And they are, I don't know, inch and a half, 2 inches long, a dark, dusky red, which means they do really blend in with the dirt below them. Tiny little things. And on their backs are these bright fluorescent orange pin dots. You have to watch carefully. But what's under your feet? And that was a bit of heaven under our feet. And a bit of an extravagant gesture on the part of nature. I want to go back to Thoreau and read you a paragraph from him. Again, about awakening. We must learn to reawaken and keep ourselves awake, not by mechanical aids, but by an infinite expectation of the dawn, which does not forsake us in our soundest sleep. and know of no more encouraging fact than the unquestionable ability of man to elevate his life by a conscious endeavor. It is something to be able to paint a particular picture or carve a statue, and so to make a few objects beautiful. But it is far more glorious to carve and paint the very atmosphere and medium through which we look, which morally we can do. To affect the quality of the day, that is the highest of arts. Every man is tasked to make his life, even in its details, worthy of the contemplation of his most elevated and critical hour. It's not nature only where we must be awake and seek to affect the quality of the day. To affect the quality of the day, as Thoreau charges us, means being awake to the people around us also. This is another way of seeking beauty. I was walking down the main street in Tarrytown right at 5 o'clock, like golden light time, when the church bell across the street started ringing. I didn't particularly notice it. But there was a man with two small children. They must have been about 3. They must have been twins. They were so close to the same size. So he pulled them over to the side of the sidewalk and was squatted down with them, pointing up at the church steeple and explaining to them why the bell was ringing. So he had taken the moment to notice and to have them notice. And their little faces were upturned with the light on them, this sense of wonder that they had of, that bell is ringing for me. It also shows up when you listen carefully to what a friend has to say, so carefully that you can understand what they're feeling when they say what they have to say. This is hard work, actually. It shows up, too, this affecting the quality of the day. When you listen to a loved one, talk about something that really matters to him or her. When you listen so carefully that you care about what he or she cares about, and that you begin to understand what it is that they are caring about. And one more example. I was proctoring an exam recently, the one I was inflicting on students. And they were bent over their work, earnest. The chewing of the pencils, the scratching of the pens, the light was coming through the windows down the side of the classroom, and it was slanted just so it was coming through and lighting up the whole room. And what it was doing was reflecting off of their papers and onto their faces. So picture this wonderful moment of a light-filled room. Each student was in his own world, and I found myself sort of aching for all of their hopes and for their fears. And I knew that they were only writing about the least important thing that I had tried to teach them, the meaning of this motif or the connection of these 3 different pieces of literature. And what I really wanted to do was to say, stop. You have missed the point. In fact, I didn't even tell you what the point was. I didn't tell you what the important part was. And no wonder you've missed it. You have to connect yourself to meaning. You have to connect yourself to life. Yeah, connect these 3 pieces of literature. Connect yourself. What are they about? Well, I can only imagine the look on their faces if I'd given into that urge for this outburst. Siddhartha, if you remember that book, he tried to teach his own son his own path. I mean, Siddhartha tried to bring his son on his path. Tried to do it by modeling the behavior, tried to do it by ignoring the son being off on his own way of living. Tried to show him a connection to tranquility, and he failed. I would have failed if I tried to tell my students this. They have to find their own paths to connection. How can we accomplish these goals? Waking up to what's around us, seeing each day as new. This is now our immediate goal for the week. Here's how. Here are some ways. You have to slow down. It takes time. It is not enough for your eyes to take in the rhodora. Your heart, a slower organ, must also engulf it. It is not enough to hear that your child had a good day or a bad day. Your heart, still slow, must remember what it is like. Simplify, simplify, simplify. This was Thoreau's exhortation. Easily said. We do not and cannot spend our lives in simple contemplation, taking every moment in completely. We'll starve. We'll be run over. We will not accomplish all the many other things that are important to us. But we can remember that to take the moments when we can. It's like good posture. Every time you realize you've fallen into the slump, you realign yourself just for the moment. Realize that this is one of the great gifts of our Sunday morning together. To realign, to stop rushing, to simplify. We simplify by leaving everything else behind for a few short moments and focusing on the beauty of this moment, this thought, this gathering. That brings us to our own heaven, which is here, under our feet, by our sides, in this moment.
Thank you, Catherine, for those wonderful words. Right now, we'd like to take an opportunity for people that have thoughts on the talk that was just given or their impressions on it to share it with the rest of the congregation.
Hi, I'm Susie Novak. Catherine, thank you. When I first came to this fellowship, 11 years ago, I had never had any religious experience really at all, other than the forced dropping off at Sunday school that you get when you're a kid. And one of the reasons that I stayed was it was so wonderful to be able to have something that I could hang on to from Sunday to the next Sunday that would kind of get me through the week. And you've continued that tradition. It's wonderful to have something now I can hang on to that will get me through the week.
That was wonderful. Thanks, Catherine. As you were talking, I thought of many of those moments for myself where I've been able to take the time to just sit and look at nature. And it reminded me, especially with the warm sun and the spring-like day we're having, that our Frost Valley retreat is coming up. And really, so many of those moments are packed into the retreat. So it's a weekend we spend in the Adirondacks. Anybody who wants to go from the fellowship, talk to me.
I'm so glad you picked Peace of the Wild Things, and I love singing it. And when I was commuting into the city during some really stressful times, the only good thing, part of it, was getting to ride on the Hudson Line. And I can remember one winter when I had horrible deadlines, a lot of stress, and you know, it was one of those crazy, nasty days, leaning against the window and looking out and watching the geese and the wild fowl in the frozen river and how gorgeous it was, and thinking the words to that song to myself as sort of a mantra to get through that morning. and just bring myself back to peace and kind of get rid of all the wild thoughts that were swarming around my head.
Hi, I'm Joseph Minetti. Thank you, Catherine. It was very thoughtful and extremely well put together service. And I just wanted to say that I appreciate your idea about an extravagance of nature. I mean, I tend to think about things on a much more scientific, sort of evolutionary perspective, and that's still what I have, but I liked that idea in contrast to my own ideas, and it's so, while there's most of me that doesn't quite line up with that, it's a good thing to bounce off of. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Hi, thanks, Catherine. I'm also reminded, Katie reminded me of traveling south on the Hudson in the fall and how beautiful the rainbow of leaves are. And I have a friend who's a very big nature walk through the woods kind of a guy. And we were walking through the woods one day, and his wife actually has a book which talks about what different animals mean to humans. And every year we have a bat visitation, and that apparently means rebirth. And there are many interpretations of, from this book. But I'm reminded of a great walk that I had one day through some woods here in Westchester with my friend Russell. And all of a sudden his hand went out and he stopped me because about 30 feet from us there were a couple of copulating turkeys. I could only imagine what it meant, but I mean, it's an image and we stopped and watched for the longest time, but it was really a God moment, so.
Thank you, Catherine. Wow, that was fantastic. I was meditating in my car in a parking lot in, I think it was Hartsdale on Central Avenue, and it was hysterical because I try to live my life, extremely ordered, extremely predictable, maximize everything for the best this and that, and when I stopped and just was myself, the person who was trying to be ordered and everything. It was the most disordered, in disarray person you've ever, and to sit there in meditation and breathing and watch my mind just freak out, it just made me feel like a fool, such a, who do you think you are kind of a thing. And once again, playing the fool, I really hate being the fool, by the way, it really rubs me the wrong way, but I am. The Rhodora, I'm in the choir and we were practicing and I had never sung it before, and it was, for me, a hard piece. I'm not particularly good at reading the music or anything, but it was kind of hard. And I got to the end, and I noticed that the music was really powerful and forceful, kind of movie score-ish, And I was like, I looked up at Marshall and everybody else. I go, the music is extremely important, and it's a flower. Why are they putting this extremely important music to talk about a flower, if you're talking about this cosmos or the, it's a flower, who cares? I hate playing the fool, I hate playing the fool because I'm listening to you going, oh, no. it's the point where you realize you're on the tee and here comes the foot.
I guess just kind of my personal thoughts on your talk, Catherine. I very much appreciated it as someone who has strove over the last couple of years to try and simplify a lot of things in my life, especially in a society where we're inundated with the idea of more rather than enough and the idea of that things have to be faster rather than slower. And to just be able to, a lot of times when I'm either successful or unsuccessful in those attempts, And a lot of times I feel maybe like I'm a little bit crazy or odd or out of the ordinary for thinking about things this way. And it's just very refreshing to hear a perspective that maybe helps validate that a little bit and realize some of the importance of taking our pleasures from the simple everyday things that we see in life, and that's really where we get our sense of meaning and our sense of happiness from. Just under the gun, I was about to cut it off.
It's just that Catherine brought up so many very important things, and it's like there's a deep well bubbling around inside, but I wanted to thank you. And I was thinking about your students and how lucky they are to have a teacher that even will contemplate them as you do and think about them, that you hope that they get the message somehow, and they probably do without your consciously saying it, that they need to make their own connection and find their own meaning. And I think that it's been a tough winter, you know, for a lot, well, everybody on the planet, really. And one of the things that's been tough is that the meanings that we've constructed over centuries or millennium as a species, so many of them have been shattered so recently in such quick succession. Ideas and beliefs and institutions and lifestyles and things that have seemed to be permanent are showing up to be maybe not so permanent. And it's, so we have to reconstruct. And so your talk today points the way to what is left when so many things turn to ashes or explode in our faces. What is left? And for that, we need the quiet moments to see and hear and feel those things. Thanks, Catherine.
Feel another hymn coming on. Hymn number 331, and at the end of the hymn, might as well just stay standing, and we'll go straight through. Closing words are a poem by Susan Cataldo. Before I went to sleep, the soft lamp lights from the tenements across the street, still in the night, resembled peace. There is something I forgot to be grateful for, but I'm not uneasy. This poem is gratitude, enough gratitude for the day. That leaf tapping against the window, enough music for the night. My love's even breathing a lullaby for me. Gentle is the sun's touch as it brushes the earth's revolutions. Fragrant is the moon in February's sky. Stars look down and witness, never judge. The city moves beneath me, out of sight. Oh, let this poem be a planet or a haven. Heaven for a poet homeward bound. Rest my child's head upon sweet dreams in contentment. Let me turn out the light to rest. Carry the flame of peace and love until we meet again.